you're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. And it lies between the pit of one's fears and the summit of one's knowledge. You are now traveling through a dimension of imagination. You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, Anthology is one man's examination of the Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer. Each podcast, I share my first impressions, analysis, and overall thoughts on Rod Serling's iconic series one episode at a time. However, in this bonus episode review series, I'll be reviewing the 2019 Twilight Zone reboot produced by Jordan Peele, Simon Kinberg, and Monkey Paw Productions, and hosted by Jordan Peele. You can find more of Anthology as well as a full episode archive at anthologypod.com. And if you want to contact me, you can use the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod, tweet me at @OVAnthologyPod, or send an email to matt@obsessiveviewer.com. Today on the show, I'll be discussing The Wunderkind. It's the fifth episode of The Twilight Zone's first season, and it premiered on April 25th, 2019 on CBS All Access. But before I get into my review and everything, just a couple of housekeeping items to bring up at the top of this episode. First up is, I know that it's been a few weeks and I addressed this in the main feed episode reviewing Static. But just want to say sorry for the lack of output. It's a one man show. It's hard to kind of keep, the engines turning, as much as they can, as consistently as I would like them to. And I just have a lot of stuff on my plate. And so, I'm back at it. I'm really intent on getting these bonus reviews pumped out and, just getting these reviews completed and actually watching this stuff. I have a busy few weeks ahead of me. So anyway, in the meantime, since my last bonus episode, The Twilight Zone was officially renewed by CBS All Access, which is awesome. It will have a second season. That was no surprise. I think I mentioned in my last review that it's a shoe-in for a renewal anyway, just because CBS All Access is still new, it's still fresh, it's still kind of, CBS is still kind of building its catalog for CBS All Access, and between Star Trek Discovery and The Twilight Zone, they would be kind of stupid not to renew The Twilight Zone for a second season since it's such a huge property. Despite what the internet may have you believe, it is still pretty highly rated from what I understand in terms of just sheer number of subscribers and everything. So not only was it renewed, but it was announced on Saturday, which was Twilight Zone Day. I don't know why that's Twilight Zone Day. It's what May 11th, May 12th. That shows how ignorant I am of Twilight Zone fandom. But anyway, I don't know why it's Twilight Zone Day, but it was Twilight Zone Day. That's when they announced, though, that on May 30th, when the season concludes, they're going to release all the episodes on CBS All Access in black and white, which is pretty awesome and pretty clever also, because it's a good way to kind of at least keep subscribers, I wouldn't say keep subscribers, subscribed, but it's more, I feel like it's more of a calculated effort to, stem the, presumably the mass exodus of subscribers once the Twilight Zone ends, its season run. So that's an interesting way to kind of keep people, into the subscription, at least for a little bit. I'm very much looking forward to seeing them in black and white. I think that'll be really interesting. The footage that they've shown, or the kind of GIFs and pictures and videos and stuff they've released on the social media pages for the Twilight Zone, look really cool. So I'm really excited to kind of revisit these episodes in black and white. Finally, my last piece of housekeeping and everything is that today I'm recording this May 15th, Wednesday, May 15th, very late at night. I just recorded my Static review. I'm recording this late at night to where tomorrow is going to be a fun day at work. But anyway, I need to get this pumped out. I need to get this review because I've been putting it off for so long. Anyway, this morning, May 15th, Netflix and Black Mirror dropped the trailer for Black Mirror season 5, which is going to be coming out on Netflix on June 5th, which is kind of perfect and beautiful because it is going to be released a week after The Twilight Zone concludes. So that is going to be perfect for me, assuming that I can get back on track after taking a few weeks off from recording these reviews. But I have every intention of trying my damnedest to do that. So I have every intention of trying my best to do it. So that's a very vague, non-committal thing. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to the new season. It's only going to be 3 episodes, which is cool because it's going to kind of harken back to the first couple of seasons before the Netflix deal. I'm kind of wondering if, because I don't think that when Netflix renewed it for season 5, I don't remember if they announced that it would be 6 episodes. But I kind of wonder, since Netflix is all about kind of like the last couple of seasons have been 6 episodes, I kind of wonder if they have made a deal with Charlie Brooker that maybe they would do 3 episodes now and then do 3 episodes in the winter. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, but either way, I'm looking forward to it. The footage looks amazing. Is it Andrew Scott who played Moriarty in Sherlock is going to be in an episode. And then we've got the actor who I'm blanking on his name, but he played Manta in Aquaman, and also Anthony Mackie from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and 8 Mile are going to be in an episode. Also, Miley Cyrus is in there. It looks like it's going to be fun. It looks like it's going to be really good. The production value looks great, so I can't wait. I'm actually, I meant to email my boss today, but I'm going to email her tomorrow. But, I think I'm going to take June 5th off from work and just stay home, watch all the episodes, maybe record 1 or 2 of the reviews, maybe all 3. I don't know, but I'm just so pumped for that. And frankly, it's interesting. I almost said it's something I would have done for The Twilight Zone, but they're releasing week to week. So, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so that's the housekeeping I have. Let me go ahead and go into my review of The Wunderkind. Plot summary courtesy of IMDb is, actually no, this is courtesy of CBS All Access, I believe. The plot summary is, a down on his luck campaign manager is determined to get a kid elected as the president of the United States. This episode stars John Cho as Rafe Hanks. He was recently in Searching, which was a great kind of thriller, and he did a really great job in that movie, because it's just really just him reacting to things on a screen and not having very minimal actor co-stars to play off of. So for a good John Cho performance, check that out. And as Oliver Foley in this episode is Jacob Tremblay. He was in Room as the kid, and he was also in The Predator, but let's not really talk about The Predator. That movie was not that good. But Jacob Tremblay is a really interesting young actor, and I'm looking forward to seeing how his career, progresses as he gets older. Let's see. And then writer for this episode is Andrew Guest, who, previously wrote for 30 Rock and was a producer on, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, also wrote several episodes. He's got a lot of comedy credits. So he wrote for Community, some sitcoms like Suburgatory, and I think that was a sitcom. I never actually watched it. yeah, it was a comedy, 20-minute comedy. And also Marry Me with Casey Wilson and Ken Marino, kind of one-season wonders there. Yeah, that's really all he has to his credit. Yeah, he's currently a producer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or a consulting producer. But anyway, director for the episode was Richard Shepard. He directed about a dozen episodes of Girls on HBO and a couple episodes of Criminal Minds, one episode of 30 Rock, Ugly Betty. He's been around for a while now. And then also I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that also co-starring in this episode is Alison Tolman, who was in Fargo season one, Castle Rock for a couple of episodes in season one. She's been in a lot of good stuff. The Sisters Brothers, The House. she's a really good actress. I really like when she pops up in things. She was also in The Gift back in 2015. But anyway, so yeah, that's the kind of talent rundown for the episode for the Wunderkind. So my initial thoughts when I first watched this, I've watched this episode so many times because it's been 3 weeks, and I don't like because my brain is weird. I don't watch the next episode until I've reviewed the recent episode. So I've watched this episode probably dozens of times at this point, and it's getting to me. So I really didn't like this episode, but I recognize that it's, and this might be controversial, but I kind of recognize that this may be the most, up to this point, this might be the most Twilight Zone the new Twilight Zone has been. I'll probably end up walking that statement back, but basically it seems like it is hearkening back to the original Twilight Zone in a specific way that is more significant than I would say the other episodes have thus far. So I'll talk about that when I get into my review, but my initial thoughts were just that, I kind of liked the ending, but other than that, it kind of didn't work for me. So of course I'm going to be spoiling the entire episode going forward. So please, be aware, watch the episode before you listen. All right. So let's start with my review, or let's go into my review. So we open with Raff Hanks, played by John Cho. He's on a hospital bed. It's mysterious, ominous, kind of futuristic. You hear the beeping and everything, and it's the color or the light is just really abrasive. And I was kind of into that. I was kind of really interested in that. And we kind of get some dialogue saying that the president is, the nurse or whatever asks if Raff knows who the president is. And then it cuts to 5 years earlier when Raff and Mara have just gotten what they believe the current president reelected. And I don't know, it's referenced that he's the most unpopular president in history, and Raff is really excited about how he got him reelected, and somehow Raff already has a book published, which I felt was kind of, I'm kind of back and forth on that. It's a nitpick. It's a 100% a nitpick, but he has a book published called The Wunderkind. I mean, it makes sense. Like, it's just kind of presuming, it's very presumptuous, but it was kind of comical to me. It was very cocky. And so we cut back to the hospital, and Raff asks who the voice is, and the person says, "I'm here by order of the president," and then Raff just says, "Then I'm fucked." And then it cuts to Raff meeting with John Larroquette, who is the current president at that time, and it's where he is basically lambasting him for the data that Raff used to quote unquote get him reelected, because it is not working and he's losing across the country and he's understandably angry. So, last bonus review, that the overuse of profanity was starting to get to me because it felt too much like a crutch. And, when I first saw this scene in particular, I felt like, okay, it's the one scene with John Larroquette. It felt really exaggerated, the way that it's just laced with so much profanity. I'm going to play a clip of this scene so you guys understand what I'm talking about. But here is the like three or four F-bombs within the first 3 minutes of the episode. So here's John Larroquette's outburst.
What the fuck, Raff?
Mr. President?
The thing I just lost, New York! Lost New Jersey! I'm from fucking New Jersey. I'm Mr. fucking New Jersey. No. We're losing the whole goddamn country.
No, my dad is...
Oh, your dad is horse shit. I listened to you. I listened to your numbers and your polls and your fancy data and your high-tech baloney. And guess what? I lost. I am a one-term joke. I'm a diaper filled with baby shit. And it is all your fault.
And, like, I don't know, I talked about in Replay how when she drops the F-bomb right at the end, it's earned and it makes sense given the heat of the scene and the energy of the scene. And I mean, it's the same here. Like, John Larroquette's character is frustrated. He's angry. He just lost his election, and he's already been established as the least likable president in history. So it's clear, like, he's not a relatable person or a good person or an understanding person or anything like that. So it tracks well. It makes sense, but it just bothered me a little bit. And like, the rest of the episode is fine as far as profanity goes, but here it just felt just like I kind of rolled my eyes at it. Again, I'm not offended by it or anything by any means. It's just like, okay, write better. Don't lean on profanity for that. But anyway, Mora tells him that he can recover from it and everything, and then we get cut to a bar 2 years later, and there's a really peculiar shot that's echoed at the end of the episode as well, where John Cho is kind of in profile on the left side of the screen in the foreground, and then the TV is on the right, but it's in the background of the scene, but both John Cho's face and the TV are in focus. So it just feels like there's a weird disconnect to the way that it's shown. Like, it looks like John Cho is, and honestly, it looks like John Cho is sitting there and he's acting in front of a green screen, and they didn't like color correct or do whatever they do in post-production to make it look like they're in the same scene. I have no idea why that's the case in this episode. I don't know if it was an artistic choice, if that was the reason why. But it feels kind of off, and it kind of just, took me out of the scene just a little bit. So John Cho is at the bar. He's, you know, whining about, or he's kind of lamenting that he's, you know, down on his luck following the disaster of the Stevens campaign. And that's when the news focuses on Oliver Foley, a YouTube star that's running for president. And the people in the bar are ridiculous. The guy tells Raph that, you should run his campaign. He tells it like it is, which is something else. I'll get into the kind of, social commentary in this episode later, but on one hand, that is so authentic to the way that, kind of the general populace kind of talks about, presidential candidates and everything. But on the other hand, it's kind of just silly because it's a freaking kid. And the kind of go-to joke that I've been making in my head whenever I think about this episode is that, this episode of The Twilight Zone puts forth this very intriguing question. What is more horrifying? Having a YouTube star as president or an 11-year-old kid as president? And the secret twist is that both are disastrous. Together, it's just a complete disaster. Anyway, so we get, Jordan Peele's narration. I'm gonna go ahead and play that here.
Meet Raph Hanks, a wunderkind. Once the most successful campaign manager of his generation. Now, Raph finds himself in a valley of booze and regret, one filled with bad choices and even worse polling. He's about to embark on a misguided road to redemption, and on his way back to the top, he'll have to take a dark detour through the Twilight Zone.
And okay, so it's fine. I like the music that's playing throughout it. It's a nice touch. But again, it's just like, I, when I first watched this episode, I was so, I guess in my head, or, I had it in my head, like what I said in my last bonus review, that the opening narration just isn't doing anything for me in terms of the writing. Like, it's, you can't emulate Serling. You can't, like, attain that level of, kind of poetry that he had in his narrations and the writing of it. But, like, it just feels, I don't want to say lazy, because that's a little reductive. It just feels too, too formulaic to have each one begin essentially with, like, meet this character's name. And it just feels like it's a template rather than going episode by episode. And that's kind of getting to me a little bit. So after the opening theme, we go back to the hospital, and Raph says that he saw an angle, he saw his shot, and he took it. And then we get him arriving at the Foley's house and for dinner. And he takes off his tie and jacket before he goes in, kind of showing that he's not like this stuffy political campaign manager guy. He's just like them, essentially. And I really like that Raph is upfront about his intentions. Like, when he talks to Oliver's parents, like, he is committing so hard to this idea that Oliver could be president. And he is, like, when Oliver's father calls him out on saying, like, yeah, you're an opportunist, Raph's just like, yeah, that's what I am, but no one's going to get hurt. Everyone's going to come out of this great. It's a win-win for everyone. Yeah. So, and I appreciate that. And I really think that this episode's saving grace is John Cho. He is a freaking rock star. Like, I love him. I've loved him as an actor ever since, well, Harold and Kumar, really. but like, I was like, even when he was in that show Flash Forward, I was so excited because at the time it was like right when Lost was ending, and I was like, oh, this is going to be the new Lost. And I was so excited because John Cho was going to be in a dramatic role. And he did a great job in that show. Like, for what that show was, it was actually pretty entertaining, but he did a good job. But the more I see of him and everything, like Searching and Columbus, he's really great. And his performance in this episode is, great in the face of a ridiculous premise. He sells it. Like, it's, I think with a lesser actor or a less talented actor who is less inclined to commit to the role, this episode would have been a much bigger disaster than what we got. Not that this episode was a disaster, it just wasn't that good, really. Jacob Tremblay does fine in the episode, but I think my biggest issue is that there's nothing really special about Oliver as a character. Like, I know that this episode pays certain homage to, It's a Good Life. Like, there's that overhead shot of the cornfield. I haven't seen It's a Good Life, obviously, given the conceit of this podcast where I'm going through it for the first time, but I will be reviewing It's a Good Life eventually. But my understanding of it is about a kid who is able to send quote unquote bad adults to the cornfield. And so I appreciate the visual of the cornfield and everything, but I hesitate to say that it's disingenuous, because it's not necessarily disingenuous. It's just an homage to a classic episode. But like, there's nothing about Oliver's character that makes him special. There's no like Twilight Zone element that makes him command audiences and everything. And I'll get into the kind of Twilight Zone element of this episode in a bit, but just, I think that that's kind of one of my biggest gripes, is that it positions Oliver as this character who connects with his constituents and his audience and everything. But it's really just telling us that and doesn't necessarily show us that, except for a couple scant, like, news clips and everything. And that bar scene. But it just doesn't, there's no like magnetism to Oliver as a character. And I think that that's kind of an issue that I ran into the 100 times I watched this freaking thing. But yeah, back to John Cho. I think that his performance is the episode's saving grace, and I really like the way that he sells the family on Oliver running for president for real. He tells him that it's going to be the experience of a lifetime, and that when he comes out of it, he's gonna have enough money to pay for college, for his sister's college, for the dog's college, and he's gonna have book deals and everything. It's gonna be amazing, and it's a win-win. And I like that because he's also upfront about how, like, oh, he's gonna be on TV again. He's gonna gain his power back as a campaign manager. That's when Oliver comes in and says that he's making another video. So, and he invites Raph to watch it being made. And this is where he goes through his campaign promises. And so I made a list of the 10 campaign promises of Oliver Foley. This is shown in the video, and then it transitions into the rally that he has in Iowa. But basically he says that he's going to have more jobs for everyone, longer vacations, less Star Wars movies, which I'm kind of all about. I would probably vote for him for that. Better air to breathe, so more people are going to ride bikes everywhere. Less war. This is so dumb. This is dumb. Number 6 is dogs for dog people and cats for cat people. And then I think number 7 is more pancake houses throughout the land, please. Number 8 is free video games for every American. And then number 9 is every month we'll have its own holiday. And number 10 is dessert is before dinner. And man, it would be a much easier pill to swallow if there was some kind of Twilight Zone element that made him magnetic to his audience. But again, I'll talk about that in a little bit. So, it's a time jump. There are time jumps all over this episode that kind of feels a little, I don't want to say it's cutting corners, because while it is cutting corners, it's also just kind of moving the plot along in a more organic way than cutting corners would lead you to believe. But anyway, we start to see Oliver kind of get wrapped up in the power that he has commanding people. Like, he tells, him and Raph are talking about, basically their plans for the campaign, and Raph says that, the choreography is being worked out, and the dancers are being worked out, and the studio is being, rented for a new video for Oliver to make. And, that's when Oliver says, like, it's been 2 months, you can do better, Raph. And that's the first part where it's like, okay, this is gonna lead to it's only gonna get worse, for the characters. That's when we get, Raph meeting up with Mara again. Mara followed him to Iowa, and she joins the campaign. It's fine. It's okay. Sure. And then it cuts back to the hospital, and the guy says, we're going to have to operate. Your condition is not stable. To which Raph says he wasn't sure he was ever stable, and that a stable person would have seen what was happening. Which, okay. For one thing, I think that that's kind of clunky. Just a little bit in terms of, just writing. It's a little, I don't know if I'd say it's a leap, but it's kind of, it's just clunky. Like, okay, the nurse or the person in the room is telling him, like, oh, his condition's not stable. And then that, like, while Raph is potentially dying on a hospital bed, he's like, he's being very self-reflective. And it feels just kind of a little silly to me. But I do appreciate that idea a little bit. The idea that he is aware that he was not stable, and that a stable person would have seen what was happening, because Raph's hubris drove him to do something ridiculous and reckless for his own benefit, and it ended up blowing up in his face in a very significant way, and is ultimately leading to, there's really no way he comes out of this episode alive, so it's leading to his death. And it's just, I appreciate that. And that's kind of where I'll come back to that in a bit. What I will say, as I said, I've watched this episode several times. If I never hear that campaign song again, It will not be too soon. And it's ridiculous because I'm going to put that clip in this episode so that everyone else can have this freaking song in their head. It's just so annoying to me. but here's a clip of Oliver Foley's just really stupid campaign song that he does in his video. So here's where I'll talk about, and you're welcome, by the way, guys. The thing about this episode that I'm really struggling with at this point is the lack of a Twilight Zone device, as I mentioned before. So, as I mentioned, Oliver isn't some superpowered being. There's no real sci-fi slant at all coming into play in the story. And that's something that I kind of, that's where I struggled the most with this episode. Like, it says something, I don't know what it says about me or about the show or about the writing. I don't know what it says about whatever, but it's kind of crazy to me that like a story about an 11-year-old kid becoming president, in a story about an 11-year-old kid becoming president, the thing that I struggle with the most is the fact that there's no sci-fi element to it per se. And like there are a couple of things that I've kind of come to terms with about it, or I've kind of thought about upon reflecting on the episode, but like you could argue that it's the country itself that is the Twilight Zone device, like stupidity and gullibility of the American public and the way we are much more concerned with celebrity than we are with, you know, policy or like genuine, like, you know, intentions from politicians. If those exist, but we're just more concerned with celebrity and, just kind of celebrity. And it's demonstrated well, like this idea is demonstrated particularly well in the news footage of people reacting to Oliver. Like, they're total freaking morons saying just completely vague platitudes, talking about how, oh, he's gonna make, he's gonna bring the country back to where it was. I'll actually play a clip of that here. So here's a clip of the morons talking on the news about Oliver Foley and why they would vote for him.
Well, Oliver's not one of these greasy pond hucksters. We got plenty of those.
There's something inspirational about starting off with someone fresh, you know, someone that believes in the things that I believe in.
He wants to make this country stronger.
I mean, he wants to bring us back to basics, back to what made this nation great.
My grandkids love him.
And I really, like, okay, so it's clear that this episode is very much a not-so-subtle dig at, like, Donald Trump. And I am all for that type of satire and, ridiculous kind of poking fun at it. But the thing, like, okay, there are certain elements of Oliver Foley's story that feels like it's just very much like, oh, it's Trump as a kid in the White House. And I'm totally for that and everything. But it's also, and this is where I don't know if I have any Trump supporters as listeners or anything, but, I just kind of feel like those news bites of people talking about it is exactly what Trump supporters sound like when, especially during the 2016 campaign. It's like I know people who just said just vague bullshit things, as reasons to support Donald Trump. And it's like, okay, like, what do you exactly, like, they're, and they would not go into specifics about it. Like, oh, I think the country should be run like a business. Like, what does that mean? Like, and Donald Trump is a terrible businessman. Like, he's failed numerous times. Like, what does that mean? And how do you, like, I don't understand anything. But yeah, it just feels like those types of kind of just vague statements is just like what the state of political discourse and support and everything is today. And I'm not just saying just Trump supporters either. It's just like people get so up their asses about their particular political beliefs that, you know, it's just if you are surrounding yourself with people who have the same political ideals as you, and you are just parroting off different statements and everything without actually discussing the issues and everything, just because, okay, you align yourself with this, with the ideals of one particular political party rather than the other, it's like, okay, well, that means the other political party is the enemy to you, and you need to shore up your conversations with just vague, stupid points that don't actually make any sense, but it will just be shut down. I'm talking about both sides of the aisle here. And it's frustrating. So anyway, in this episode, the news footage of people reacting to Oliver and talking about how, like, oh, he tells it like it is, and he's going to do for the country. He's going to bring us back to what this country is all about. It's really just vague, jingoistic bullshit kind of platitudes that mean nothing. And that's stuff that I saw firsthand in the 2016 elections, the midterm elections, the everything that's going on, really. It's aggravating. But anyway, and I'm sure it's going to be the same for 2020 and 2024 and 2028. And by that time, we'll probably all be gone. But anyway, so going back to the episode, Oliver's filming his video. He goes to his parents after he's done, and he is whining about having to go to the doctor. And okay, so this seeds the idea, this establishes the idea that he doesn't like doctors, and he thinks that they're just old people that are poking him with needles. And that comes into play later, because he is going to eventually get all of the doctors in the country, I guess, to be young people, which, sure, okay, fine, I'll go along with it, whatever. But it's a good way to establish it. But the way that he acts and behaves at his parents, yelling at them, screaming that he hates them and running away, it's like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's really irritating. Makes me never want to have kids, even more than I don't want them now. But it should also be the moment where everyone realizes how stupid of an idea this is. And the absence of, like, an overt Twilight Zone device to establish that, you know, the why of what's going on, or why everyone is going along with this, the absence of that device is what is the most detrimental to this episode. Like, it's the same kind of idea as the comedian. Like, okay, you can understand, like, you can say that when Kumail's character meets with Tracy Morgan, it's basically saying, like, okay, you got to give yourself to the crowd, and he tells his personal stories on stage. That is what triggers them to applaud and laugh and everything. So, like, that device, that's a device. That is a Twilight Zone device. Like, that is the supernatural element to the Twilight Zone, that it is creating this scenario in which he is a star of a comedian. Here in this episode, there's nothing like that. There's nothing established that says why Oliver is kind of capturing the imagination of an entire nation. None of that. And with the absence of that, it becomes too much of a ridiculous premise to really get on board with, because there's nothing to tell you why it's okay. And I understand, yes, it is the Twilight Zone. It is a series that is living in this alternate world where things of absurd natures occur, and, you know, you can, like, throughout the majority of what I've seen of the original series, like, that's what you can expect. But there always seems to be a device, a reason behind it, but here there's no reason for it, and that's just what is really kind of irritating to me. So next up, we get the debate prep scene where it's revealed, well, not revealed, but it's shown that Oliver doesn't know anything, and that's pretty obvious, but he tries to deflect the Iraq question. I appreciate that because it is purely deflection. He says, I'm glad you asked me about Iraq. It's an important topic, but not something that we can talk about here in 30 second snippets. And that's just what politicians do. And, not to point any fingers, but the Trump administration for the last 2.5 years or however long it's been, to almost 2.5 years, 16, 17, 18. God, I don't know how long it's been. It's almost midnight, guys. Yeah, 2.5 years. Good God. Anyway, for the last two and a half years, like, it's been all deflection. Like, if you don't think that, if you think that the Trump administration is being honest with you, and isn't deflecting your attention and everything, then you're clearly not paying close enough attention, because it is very obvious that that's kind of the bread and butter of it, of what Trump and his administration is doing. Anyway. And I appreciate that the debate coach, Larry, in this scene is like the one character who sees things as they are during the campaign. And I like that Raph fires him just strictly out of arrogance. Like, he's completely unwilling to accept Larry's concerns and, perspective on it, because he believes that Oliver Foley can become president. Again, like, and like, it's later talked about how he is, Oliver is connecting with people, and how, apparently Raph starts to buy into it and everything. But there's nothing in the episode to really make you believe that Raph is buying into Oliver's stuff. And it kind of contradicts some of the stuff about, you know, Raph's hubris and how he is, kind of being hoisted by his own petard in this episode. I don't know. I'll get to that in a bit, I think, in more detail. But the actual debate moment is hysterical. Like, seeing Oliver stumble on stage about taxes and everything is just, it's kind of hilarious. And it's really funny and stupid, but it's pretty entertaining. Then we get to, Raph in the hospital bed, and this is where, the attending physician or the nurse or what have you, the orderly, I don't know what he would technically be, but, he tells him that the doctor was held up. He's on a different level. And that made me laugh in retrospect, because, like, the way he says it, he says he's on a different level. It leads to one of my favorite moments at the end of this episode that I'll get to at the end. But, I just really liked that kind of seeding line there. So after the debate fiasco, Raph is back at the bar. He's confronted with the fact that he's a joke. The TV is talking about how he's a joke, and the bartender turns it off. Yeah. And then Mara comes in and tries to console him. And he says, I started this whole thing to get out of the mess I was in, but along the way, I started believing what he was saying. And okay. So here we go. The conviction in John Cho's performance almost makes up for the fact that there's really no other indication that Oliver says anything interesting or appealing enough to be taken seriously as a presidential candidate at all, much less say anything, or do anything that would make John Cho's character truly believe in Oliver's kind of position to become president. It's just, it's such a ridiculous, over the top premise. And to have the main character talk about how he started to believe in the candidate when the candidate isn't doing anything, like, it's just not, it's a disconnect there. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't know. It just, that bothered me quite a bit. So Mara tells him that she went to the Foleys to check on them. The dog is dying. And Oliver wants Mara to ask Raph if it's okay for him to make a video about the dog. And that's when Raph gets inspired and runs out of the bar saying that he's going to get Oliver Foley elected president. Also, just real quick, the way that he slaps the bar patron's back as he's walking out the door just looks like it hurt. Like, I don't know, that kind of made me cringe a little bit each time I watched it. So then we cut to the video of the dog, and it's, again, it's kind of ridiculous, and it's very surface level, which I think plays into the fact that the citizens of the country, the populace of America in this episode, is kind of ridiculous and just straightforward, because when we see the dog and Oliver references that he's dying, it just says incurable dog cancer. And I was like, okay, that's whatever. That's funny. And I know it's probably intentionally funny, obviously, but, I thought that was silly and kind of fun. But yeah, so this leads to, and Oliver talks about how family is important and he's going to surround himself with the best people, to get the job done and everything, which is, you know, whatever. So then we see that Oliver wins the Iowa caucus and then cut to him as president. And that's a big leap in a premise that is already testing the audience's suspension of disbelief. I don't know. I think that the episode taking so much time to establish the campaign and go through the campaign, just feels, I don't know. I'm back and forth on that. So it feels just kind of jarring to have him immediately become president. Not immediately become president, but suddenly become president. After we only see him interact with, like, we don't hear any other candidates talk. Like, we just see him on the debate floor and, everything. But then again, it's kind of an allegory to, Donald Trump's rise to the presidency. And Donald Trump is, you know, probably isn't the best debater. I can't, every time I see him, like, it's just, he's boisterous and very flamboyant and just moronic, really. But even when you have, like, the most, I don't know, when you have, like, actual seasoned politicians going up against him, it's, he still got elected president. So I can kind of understand the leap here, but I think it's just too big of a leap to see him just not have any other interaction with the other candidates and everything. I don't know. So as soon as he gets into office, he wants to fulfill his promises. He talks about how he wants everyone to have video games, and he references Game Boys, which felt really weird and antiquated, but that's a nitpick, so I'll move past it. And when the chief of staff says, like, well, I don't think Congress will go for that, he just demands that it happens, and he threatens to tax video game companies, and he says that if you can't get it done, then he'll get someone else in to get it done. It's all in all pretty silly, but also feels like it's another allegory to, like, Trump and everything. And kind of just, kind of creating a scenario where, the characters that are in the president's inner circle have to fall in line with the president, and he's incapable of having any type of pushback or anything. And with good reason, because he's a fucking kid. So once he becomes president, like, this episode, or this moment where he becomes president, and throughout the rest of the episode, the tone, or I guess tone is the right word, shifts a little bit, to being about the office of the president and the power within that office. So even with someone unqualified who makes a mockery of the office, he can get away with everything because the office of the president carries a blind respect and dignity to it. And that's the thought I had. And then suddenly I see freaking penguins on the White House lawn, which I guess I get what they're doing. Like, Oliver wanted penguins at the White House, whatever. But it's just like, that's just almost too random and weird. And I don't know. It just felt like a little too much. And then we see like the Oval Office is decorated with different gaming things. And there's a swing that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, presumably, is pushing him on. And it's just, it's all in all, that's just, it's so, it's like ridiculous overload. And it just feels like it's just so weird. And Oliver, when he's swinging in the Oval Office, mentions that he's going to create a new vlog for, like talking about troops and everything. And, then the chief of his chief of staff, I believe it is, says, "I'm not sure vlogging is the best way to communicate." And that's about as subtle a Trump dig as the episode can manage. And maybe the series as a whole can manage. Cause it just felt like clearly like substitute Twitter with vlogging. And, you'll see that it's, you know, pretty clearly a dig at Trump. Also, like I'm almost done with this episode and I didn't pick up on a lot of Easter eggs. Like, I did notice the Whipple brand arcade, game in the Oval Office. It's a, it looks like a space, themed thing, which is going to come into play with the next episode. But other than that, I don't really know. I didn't really notice any other Easter eggs or anything. The cornfield being a reference to It's a Good Life, like, that's the only thing that I could really see. And it's kind of, that was kind of surprising. Maybe I missed a ton. Let me know if I did, because it's just, it was weird because coming off of the last, four episodes where, you know, there were tons of Easter eggs and everything, I could not pick up on it really that many Easter eggs in this episode. So, so Raph talks to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. I think that that's who he was. And that scene is pretty funny. Like, that actor is such, like, he plays it as such a military stereotype character, but it's really good. Like, I was really into his performance, because he is blindly following Oliver because of the office of the president. And just the way that he says, like, the way that he says his line about how he has to plan a, like, a government party for the president's sister or something, or parade or something like that. It's just like he says it with such authority and such like such a military cadence that the fact that he's saying these frankly really ridiculous string of words is just really jarring and kind of funny. And this scene between Raph and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is where the episode does a decent job of selling its main point, that the power of the presidency puts blinders on people and creates a scenario where someone can have, you know, way too much power for one person, and people are not willing to see the danger that it's presented, I guess. And I do like that the chairman says, this is the greatest country in the world. Everyone's happy about their video games. The approval ratings are through the roof. This is a tough time. This is a weird time to be talking treason. And just like, that's where you get like a sting of like threat. And it's just, it's really, I enjoyed that, about as much as I could in this kind of somewhat over the top episode. I also appreciate the homage to The Shining that was in this episode, where Oliver's riding the trike around the White House and, it's kind of following him from behind, like the perspective, the camera is following him from behind, similar to Danny Torrance in The Shining. I appreciate that, but I mean, the series already did an homage to The Shining, a more overt homage to it in the first episode. So it kind of feels like, okay, that's fine. I already saw an homage to The Shining, but okay. So after the conversation with the chairman doesn't work out, Raph tries to appeal to Oliver's mother to intervene, but she is just as hypnotized by it as everyone else. And maybe that's the Twilight Zone element of the episode. Maybe Raph is imbued with some Twilight Zone power to get people to believe this insane idea that a kid could be president. Because Oliver's mother says, like, everything you said came true. He connects with people. Everyone loves him and everything's going great. Like, maybe Raph's power as a campaign, manager is the Twilight Zone element of this episode. If that's the case, if that was the intention of the writer of this episode and the writing staff of the show, I would have liked it to be better defined. Like, it would have been a better episode overall if, like, it was just established early on that that's what was going on. So when all that fails, Raph talks to Mara, who moved on after the campaign and is prospering in the Oliver Foley era of the country. And she says that Raph's mistake was staying with Oliver when he got elected. And I like that. I kind of like that as kind of a, I guess, a statement. Like, okay, these people worked hard to do this thing specifically for really Raph's hubris and his him wanting to get back on top. And Raph stuck with it, but Mara moved on and is living a prosperous life now. Yeah, and sure, it was fine. So we get one of our last, or second to last, hospital scenes where Raph says that he tried to do the right thing for once. And we get cut to the White House with Oliver Pudding, which obviously is, feels like a pretty, overt reference to, Donald Trump, who is a fan of golfing, a lot. So this, like when Raph comes into the room, it's another weirdly framed shot where Oliver is in the foreground and Raph is in the background. And like, it's like Oliver's face is like superimposed in the frame. And both Oliver's face and Raph's face are, I think they're both in focus, similar to earlier in the episode. But it just seems, it looks weird. It looks off. It looks almost dreamlike. And maybe, I don't know if that's the intention, if it's an artistic choice, but it just kind of felt a little off. Raph is going to voice his concerns to Oliver, but Oliver's pissed that Raph is challenging him. He switches the lights to more creepy lighting. And basically it comes down to, he just wants everyone to back him unconditionally. And that's where it's revealed that the dog was never dying, that Oliver manipulated everyone. And that's fine. Sure. And he gets angry about not getting a hole in one. He knocks down the golf balls and challenges Raph to tell him that it was a hole in one. And so this is the big moment of the episode where Raph has to decide whether he's just going to fall in line with this kid president, or if he is going to stand up and kind of try to put an end to this, craziness that he was the architect of. And John Cho's performance here, again, it's like when he tells Oliver that it wasn't a hole in one, it's really good. Like, he really commits to this role and it's the most insane role that you can imagine. I really appreciated the earnestness that John Cho gave in his performance in this episode. I thought he was again the saving grace of the episode. He elevated an otherwise very problematic episode for me. And also to kind of pay tribute to Jacob Tremblay's performance, that really creepy smile he gives right before he has Raph shot is really ominous and unsettling and really good. I enjoyed his performance too. And again, I really hope that Jacob Tremblay has a long and prosperous career, because I think that he's a very talented young actor. When the Secret Service agents shoot John Cho's character, the blood spraying on the portraits behind him was a nice touch. I enjoyed that. And then we get a cut to the news clips showing that Raph Hanks has been vilified in the media and is, and he is like public enemy number one. And I'll go ahead and play a clip of this, of these news pieces here, right here.
What do you think about Raph Hanks?
Oh, I think he's the worst scum of the earth.
How dare he try and attack that sweet little boy?
The president dodged a bullet. Literally.
Raph Hanks got what he deserved.
Raph Hanks got what he deserved.
So I think that that's a pretty strong, like, pre-ender to the episode. And also the news tickers in that scene talk about middle schoolers, and I think it was Oregon, were taken into custody for treasonous activity. And I thought that was kind of, like, obviously it's, you know, Oliver, his power has grown and he's, you know, taking in kids that he doesn't like as treasonous people. Which I like that. It's kind of showing his growth and his kind of fascist leanings. So the episode ends with the shot of the hospital, and this is my favorite part of the episode because it is kind of leaning into the ridiculous nature of this episode. It's kind of the big money shot of the episode is that the orderly or nurse or whoever it was, tells Raph that he can't operate on him because the law doesn't allow him to be a doctor. And the president has appointed him his own personal doctor to come and operate on him, and that's when we get the reveal that the doctor is just a little kid, and he's just like, okay, let's make this quick because I got to get back to my video games. And I liked it. I thought that was a really fun way to end the episode because it is so out there and so kind of dumb, but it's planted reasonably well throughout the episode. Like, it makes you go back and, like, the line where the guy is like, the doctor's on a different level. Like, that's just, it's really, putting a pin on the completely ridiculous, absurd reality that this episode exists in. And it's just, it's so, I don't know. I thought that that was kind of a nice touch for the end of this episode. It's just really fun and kind of creepy, but silly and over the top. But also, it's, and this is what I meant when I said earlier that I feel like this is the, maybe the most Twilight Zone, this new Twilight Zone series has been so far. Because this ending is a character, is the downfall of a character whose hubris got the better of him. He is suffering and is being killed as a direct result of his own actions that he admitted to doing, strictly because he wanted to get back in the limelight. He wanted to have his own, he didn't do it out of, nobility or anything like that, or selflessness. It was completely selfish to have, to latch onto Oliver Foley to try to get him to be president because he wanted to get back up to the top of his game. He was very hubristic in that. And I really kind of really appreciate the way that the episode, turned that on its head and made this kind of twisted end to this character that is a result of his own doing. Even if he tried to do the right thing at the end, like, he was still victim to his own actions and his own hubris. And I mean, that's about the only, like, that's the biggest compliment that I can bring myself to pay to this episode. Because again, it wasn't a great episode. It wasn't, at times, it wasn't even really that good of an episode. It was just kind of, the kindest thing I can say is probably just a mediocre episode. I would say it's the weakest episode of the five that I've seen so far. And it's just, I don't know. It didn't work for me in a lot of places, but some places it did work for me. Yeah. So I guess that's my review of The Wunderkind. Finally got this review up. I'm so proud of myself. Sorry again for the delay, but I'm going to work hard to get the rest of these episodes going. Let me know what you thought of The Wunderkind. I'm finally going to be able to listen to other podcasters talk about it because, when I do these episodes, I like to do it in a vacuum. So, for the last 3 weeks, I have not listened to any reviews or read any reviews or moved on to the next episode of The Twilight Zone or done anything like that. So I'm really excited to finally dig into, what people are saying about The Wunderkind. And I hope that, you know, if you guys have opinions on it, even though it's a few weeks late, please let me know. Tweet me at OV Anthology Pod. You know, hit me up on Facebook at facebook.com/anthologypod. Or email me at matt@obsessiveviewer.com. I'm always looking for, feedback from listeners, and I'm really like hearing what you guys think of, the new Twilight Zone and everything. So, yeah. Okay. It is now 12:30 and I have to work. I have to go to work in 5.5 hours. That's not right. Math is so hard, guys. I have to be at work in 6.5 hours. So, good God. Okay, I'm getting loopy. Hope you guys enjoyed this review. I'm going to have more soon, I promise. And yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about 6 Degrees of Freedom. I'm looking forward to watching the episode, especially since it's a space episode. So I'm super excited about that. I'll hopefully get that episode up and posted sooner rather than later. Yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening. On the main feed, I'll talk about The Prime Mover, which I talked about last... Anyway, okay, I'm going to bed. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in The Obsessive Viewer's TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about The Obsessive Viewer's annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com, and on Twitter at @obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at TowerJunkiesPod.com and at TowerJunkiesPod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at TheSecularPerspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Kitty! Yeah.
Let's hit it! Self-evident, all of our for president. He's the one we need to be the White House president.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.